Hi, this is Sam.
And this is Inuel.
And this is Murderous Intention. Hey guys, so we're back, and dude, if you hear my dog barking, whining, please forgive him. He's, I don't know what's going on with him. He's just wanting attention today. So forgive him. Now, let's go and talk about last week, the teacup. That was pretty strong, man.
Yeah.
Like, from him being a kid to being a grown adult, he kept just poisoning and killing people and whatnot. And it's just like, dude, are you not gonna, like, stop? How many times have you been in prison and you're still doing it?
Yeah.
You know, you're still finding ways.
For sure.
So as you guys know, this is children murderers, child killers, however you want to put it. The basis is children who kill. And like we said last week, if you don't want to listen to this month's theme, that's okay. There's next month. But we do encourage that you listen and you can know what to look for. When it comes to this kind of issues, especially when it comes to our own kids.
Signs and stuff like that.
Yeah. So my question. Mm-hmm. How, when you were a kid, your best friend, do you think they would ever turn on you or, you know, do anything harmful to you?
The short answer is no. The long answer is I never trusted anybody, so I kind of had it in the back of my head.
True. So I don't know if you guys saw my tweet the other day on our podcast tweet, Twitter. I said, and if I'm right, it was like best friends can be our better enemy, something like that in that nature. And that actually was a hint for this week's podcast, is how your best friend can always become your best enemy.
Well, they do say that there's a thin line between love and hate.
Oh, we're gonna cross that line so bad this episode. So I don't know if much of you guys have heard about the Skylar Nice case.
I haven't.
So I'm going to go ahead and dive. And I just want to say, you can watch the Dateline episode, Something Wicked. It's about her case. There is this movie that is called Death Click. And it's supposed to be about Skylar Nice's case, and honestly, I don't recommend watching it if you wanted to understand what happened, because it does not coexist with any of the evidence, with any of the situations that was going on. Like, very few factors is accurate, and then everything else is just like Hollywood, you know.
So they took a hint of what happened to her and over-dramatize it, whatever that word is.
Yeah, they over-dramatize it. So I'm just saying, I don't recommend that movie, which you can see it on, like, Amazon, Tubi, and some other stuff. But I don't recommend watching that movie to understand what happened in this case. If you really want the complete, like, further details, I would say go onto Dateline. The episode is called Something Wicked. And there's a lot of also podcaster. The one that I was also watching of a podcaster, her name is Kendall Ray. She was awesome, and I like how she keeps everything, based off of the facts, and she lets you create your own opinion on the matter. So she's awesome. So now on to our case. So her name is Skyla Annette Neese, and she was born on February 10th, 1996. She was the only child of Mary and David Neese, and at the time, Mary Neese, she worked as an administrator assistant for a cardiac lab, and David Neese was a product assembler at Walmart. So Skylar was a student at University High School when her life came to a close. I'm going to put it like that, you know. And here's the thing is that she wanted to be a criminal defense lawyer. You know, which I'm like, wow. You became a criminal defense lawyer in a different way, though. My love. So she worked part-time at Wendy's with like two other close friends of hers. Skyla also lived in a little town called Star City, which was like a sleepy little town in West Virginia. She was often described as boiled rotten because she was the only child. So basically, you know, anything she wanted, her parents within means got it for her. So now in terms of her academia, she was very like a high achiever. She excelled in school. So which is why I can understand why, you know, her parents would say, okay, well, you work hard, you are responsible, we'll give you what you would like. Right. You know, like she did excellent in almost every subject, including the subjects that she dislike. So you know how most of us will slack off during those classes. She didn't. She still did good, even if she hated that teacher. So now let's go to her being a toddler. So since she was a toddler, she had this one really good friend named Morgan Lawrence, and the two were inseparable for most of Skylar's early life, and the two family were extremely close because of that. Though they slowly drifted apart with school, you know, as most kids do, you know, they get into a clique and they, you know, start hanging out more with that person, but they still remained, you know, friends. Morgan, in one episode, she even said, like, they still, to this day, she considers her to be her sister. Skyla had another best friend named Sheila Eddy. Now, this is one of the persons who becomes a main character. Okay? So you got Skyla and you got Sheila now. Sheila was born on September 28, 1995. So Sheila is a little bit older than Skyla. And she was born in Blacksville, West Virginia. And she was also the only child for Tara Clendon and Greg Eddy. And the two entered their freshman year together. It was around that same time that they met Rachel Soff, who was a little redhead. She was in the drama classes. She was always like the main character in there. And she was also a very church-going girl. Like, she did her naughty things like all church girls do. Sorry, gotta put you guys out there. But, you know, she was fairly new to them, and they embraced her. Let's just say it like that. So Rachel is one of our other main characters in this edition. And she was born June 10th, 1996. And she grew up in Morgantown, and she also was the only daughter of Rusty and Patricia Soft. Now, Rachel's parents were divorced. Okay. So just letting you guys know this. Rachel joined the school and the three of them became like joined at the hip. If you saw one, you saw the other two. If you saw two of them, you know, they was always together. They were their own little clique. And most people would refer them to the Three Musketeers. So the trio gained a rowdy reputation. They often snuck out after curfew, went to parties, drank and smoked what I like to say, Mary Jane. Okay. You guys know what I mean, but I'm not going to say it. Okay. So their friendship was extensively documented on social media, which, like all millennials, they tweeted about everything they did, every thought they had. Worse was, and I say worse, I don't mean it as an offense. I'm just saying Sheila would post every thought she had, every unfiltered opinion of hers. She posted it on her Twitter. And it was just like extreme verbiage, you know? Like, dude, why do we need to know this? And like I said, they were extremely active on their Twitter. So we're going to jump a lot of ahead. We're going to talk about the day's event that led to the tragedy. So on July 6th of 2012, Skylar arrived home from a late shift at Wendy's and retired to her room. You know, she goes to her parents, say goodnight. She tells her mom, I love you, hugs her, and then goes to her room. So, but little did her parents know, this was going to be the last time they saw their daughter. The following afternoon, David Neese knocked on Skylar's door to lend her the family car, as he would sometimes would do, was lend her the car so she could go to work while he, you know, does what he has to do. But to his unfortunate, no answer. So David noticed that the door had been locked, which Niece was able to pick the lock using a coat hanger and enter the room. But it was also common that she would lock her room from time to time, which is most teenagers do. My child cannot do that because, you know what? There is not a lock mechanism on her doorknob. So hot to her. But she does put boxes in front of her door to try to create a locking mechanism. And I tell her every time, I'm like, that's a fire hazard. Yeah. She gets mad. She's like, I could just go out my window. I'm like, yeah, you could break your ankle on the way down. So it's quite an argument in my house about that. But back to the story. So he unlocks it with a coat hanger, enters the room to see that her bed was never slept in. So he calls his wife. However, she's not surprised. Mary's like, okay, well, you know, maybe she went with her friends. Maybe she left early and went with her friends to go shopping. You know, let's see if she comes back before she got to go to work. If not, you know, we'll go from there. So her childhood friend Morgan mentioned later in an interview that Skylar had previously snuck out in the middle of the night. So it was not unlikely that this was the case once again. And also, I believe like once or twice she ran away just because of like some stupid stuff, but she came back, you know, it wasn't like a complete, like, I'm a runaway cross country, you know, it was just a runaway because you got pissed off with your parents and you think you can make it and find out you can't, you know, so you come back home. Mm-hmm. So Dave goes outside, and he starts to take a, you know, smoke, you know, waiting for his daughter to come home. Like most parents, you're nervous. So he figures if I smoke a cigarette right now, it will calm me down. So he goes out to the garden. And then that's when he notices that Skylar's bedroom window was wide open and there was the footstool underneath it, which he realized this is how she every other time had snuck out, was she'll put the footstool bench right in front of her window so that way she can be able to reach, because she was a small girl. She would be able to reach out, and then she could also be able to climb back up. So that's when he realized, you know, she snuck out and was intending to come back home. So he rang Mary again to voice his concerns about, but Mary reassured him that she would likely be home later as she had a shift to work that night. And like I said, she was very responsible when it came to working. She did not miss a day. You know, this is how this girl made her own money, you know, to be able to get her own stuff. So 6 hours later, at around 4 p.m., Dave and Mary got a call from Skyla's employer stating she had not come into work. She was due to work, but she has not returned, not come in. So knowing never to miss a shift, this instantly alerted the parents, who then decided to call the police. Star City unit were assigned to the case and searched her bedroom for clues of her whereabouts. The first thing police noticed was the abundance of personal items left in the room by Skylar, which added to the theory that she was planning on returning home. Her phone charger, contact lenses, and toothbrush were still in the bedroom, and it appeared as though the teenager had not taken any change of clothes. So, by all this, you know now, okay, she's planning on coming home. Just when? What's going on? So, it was around this time that the family received a call from Sheila Eddy. Remember that main character? Okay. So, this is Skylar's best friend. And she's sobbing, and she admits that Skylar has snuck out with her and Rachel the night before. She told the parents that Skylar had demanded to be dropped off at the street corner rather than outside her house to not wake up her parents. This was said to be around 11:45 p.m., and neither Sheila nor Rachel had heard from Skylar in the 18 hours since the drop-off. And I say drop-off with air quotes, okay? And you'll find out soon. Then this led the already panic-stricken parents to believe the most likely scenario was that somebody had kidnapped the girl. So later that day, Sheila arrived at the niece's household, anxious to comfort them and provide any help she could. Now this just knowing the details, I just want to, like, why, child, why? But we'll find out more. I'll let you know why I'm the way I'm being right now, okay? You'll find out. So, with the police, Sheila, and the family, they review CCTV footage that had been retrieved from the parking lot behind the house at 12:26 a.m. A pale three-door car pulled up behind the building. And Skylar was seen running towards it and getting in the backseat before it took off. So Sheila denies that car being hers. She said, let me not jump ahead. Okay. And she suggests that the driver may be a secret boyfriend, while only a grainy picture of the vehicle to go off of. So police were unable to trace it and could only conclude that it belonged to somebody Skylar knew, as she was seen willingly running towards it and getting in. As a result of this findings, the police refused to issue an Amber Alert for the missing teen. So, in Star City at that time, these alerts were not used for missing children thought to be runaways, or those who generally left on their own accord. Skylar's parents, however, were still extremely concerned for their daughter's whereabouts and felt as though the police were not doing enough to find her. Their only source of comfort was Sheila, who spent nearly every day at the niece's household, reassuring the family that Skylar would return home soon. Bullshit. Sorry. Rachel was said to be away at church camp, miles away, and Sheila's loneliness and concern for her best friend led her to have a breakdown in Skylar's room. Which I'm just like, are we serious? So because she ends up having a breakdown in Skylar's room, the you know, her and Mary, they share a hug. Mary comforts Sheila, you know, and Sheila to Mary. And I'm just like, what are you? Yes, I make noise when I'm just not paranoid, but when something ticks me off, sorry. So on July 11th, local news reported about Skylar. Thanks to David and Mary attempting to spread the word, a woman in North Carolina called to say she saw a girl who looked like Skylar with a red hair girl. The description of the other girl appeared to match Rachel, so some assumed that Rachel had skipped camp and ran away with Skylar. Sadly, as Mary and David were about to leave for North Carolina, the two girls were identified as runaways from another state. Devastated and convinced police were still not doing enough to secure their daughter's whereabouts, David and Mary took matters into their own hands and attempted to make Skylar's story viral. So you do what you gotta do, you know, and I praise them because they're like, we need to find our baby. This is a need. Is he sleeping on his hand? Mm-hmm. Cute little picture moment. Oh, my bad. He woke up. Damn it.
You woke him up.
I messed up that picture moment. I would have taken it, but he moved. Sorry, guys. Dude, why you do that to me? Okay. So it was around this time that Rachel returned home from a church camp. And so now she was able to be interviewed about what happened with Skylar. So she was said to be extremely nervous and deny being at the party with Skylar. Okay. Okay. In an attempt to narrow down their search, police insist Sheila take them on a drive through the route they took the night of Skylar's disappearance. Sheila navigates through the side streets and quiet areas until they eventually arrive back at Skylar's street. When asked for the same information, however, Rachel told an entirely different story. So these girls cannot keep their facts straight. Just telling you. So in her version of events, the girls supposedly drove the opposite way and took the main roads out of Star City. So, yeah, this is becoming like, you guys need to get your facts right. Don't try to do something if you can't be on the same page. What's that face for? What's the face for?
No, I'll let you know at the end.
Okay. If you guys only could see his face, I'm just like, he got words. He got words. We're going to say that. So police put pressure on Rachel, telling her that her story could easily be checked against CCTV cameras from the road in question, to which she responded, "Well, I was really high, so maybe not." Believing that the two girls may know more than what they were letting on, police reviewed the security footage before Skylar's disappearance to see if Sheila's car ever arrived at the property to pick Skylar up. So 4 hours of footage later only showed Skylar leaving the house once. And that was to run into the unknown vehicle. This led investigators to doubt the story of the girl sneaking out and put pressure on Rachel. So they're noticing Rachel is the weaker one between Shayla and Rachel. So they're going to add more pressure to her because she can easily be broken down and end up telling the truth. And you'll see how this actually comes into place. So, though Shayla's car was strikingly similar to that in the CCTV footage, she denied, okay, that it was hers. So police did not have enough to be able to charge her with anything. But meanwhile, mobile analysts found that both girls were incredibly active at Blacksville at around 4 a.m. In an interview, Rachel claimed that the three drove to Blacksville to smoke Mary Jane. And at one point, Skylar wanted to go to her friend's house to get more drugs, and Rachel and Shayla agreed to drop her off. So immediately after this interview, the police interviewed Shayla. And Shayla says, you know, basically the same story, but instead she says Skylar left on her own accord to her friend's house and that the two could not find her after that. So the next day, Shayla retracts. Sorry, guys. So the next day, Shayla retracts her statement and then says that the two did, in fact, drop her off at her friend's house. Now, it's kind of funny. Rachel says they dropped off at the friend's house. Then they go to Shayla and they say, well, what happened? And Shayla says, oh, no, she left on her own. You know, we couldn't find her. But then the next day, she says, yeah, we did drop her off. Do you think maybe Shayla conversated with Rachel to find out what she said to the police? And then, you know, said, okay, let me back it up.
I don't know.
He really is not one to say anything. He is biting this tongue. And I... Come on. I'm going to keep going. We're going to break him, okay? We're going to break him. Just like they broke Rachel. Sorry, guys. I'm a little excited. So this suggested to the police that the two were attempting to write a cover-up story together. However, there was not sufficient evidence to make charges. 5 months after Skylar's disappearance, Rachel's mental health starts to decline. Wow. So she starts to get very paranoid. She becomes very emotional.
Very guilty.
And it's, like you said, it's the guilt eating her up from within. The fact of knowing what they did. And the fact that, remember, she's a church-going girl. So this is normally out of her, this is not normally, this is something that is a sin in her book, you know, and now she's God stricken because God is throwing his hand at her and saying, you did it. I just went like all Pentecostal. Like, I'm sorry, guys. Sorry. It's one of those days for me right now. So, yeah. So, with her mental health declining, she becomes, like I said, unstable. She becomes violent towards her friends and family. And was, at one point, she got into a fight where her parents took away her phone, trying to understand what was going on with her. And they made a 911 call saying, hey, we need somebody to come out here and help us with this child. And you can hear her screaming, give me back my phone. You can hear her just going crazy. Okay. So she gets admitted to a psychiatric unit. And because of this, police can't communicate with her. So they also, her parent family are fearing that she might do something because of the way she's acting. So more so she's in the psychiatric unit. So when Rachel was discharged after 6 days, and her family went immediately to the police. Now, I'm going to give you guys, we're going to take a little palate cleanser before we go into the details of what's next to come.
Okay.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Okay, so, like I said, when she came back from that, when she got into the interview, first thing she says to the police was, "We stabbed her." So the police, shocked, they pushed her to tell her story from the beginning. So here's what was said. On the night of the murder, and yes, murder, Shoff and Eddie invited Niece to sneak out with them. Niece, who had recently had a falling out with the two, was initially hesitant. And the reason why they had a falling out, side note, is that on one night when they were all spending the night over, having a little sleepover, they locked Skylar into the bathroom. And she can hear them, what seemed like they were hooking up. And she was noticing how Rachel and Sheila were kind of getting closer and closer. And they would start ignoring her and start pushing her away. So she became the third wheel. And it was basically, you know, she was tweeting about it, you know, saying, you know, it's nice that friends, you know, don't invite you to hang out or whatnot. So yeah, so that's why they were had a falling out, was because of that whole thing. But they, you know, they got her and convinced her after a series of phone calls and texting between them to change her mind. So Rachel recalled filling up Sheila's car with shovels, cleaning supplies, and change of clothes. They hid the knives in their hoodies and called Skylar to say that they were on their way to pick her up for a joyride. So, she, just as another side note, Sheila and Eddie had been planning Skylar's murder for months now. They left Eddie's house prepared to carry out the assault on Niece. And like I said, in the car, there was the knives underneath the hoodie, which they were kitchen knives, just to let you know. They had paper towels, the bleach, the cleaning cloths, clean clothes, and the shovel. So remember that. So approximately at 12:30 a.m., Niece climbs out of her bedroom window, crosses the street, gets into the back seat of a four-door sedan. So they thought it was they saw it as a three-door because that's all they could see was three doors. You know, the one that Skylar opens, the one from the driver, and the back driver side, however you want to put it. Mm-hmm. Driver's passenger door. There you go. driver's side, passenger, whatever. You guys know what I mean. Okay. So law enforcement officers later determined that the sedan had been in the possession of Eddie that evening. The three girls then headed northwest from Star City. So remember how Rachel's story was leading them out of Star City? There you go. Towards Blacksville via U.S. Route 19. And I'm going to call them now the perpetrators because that's what they are. They had planned to travel along West Virginia Route 7, but turned around after spotting a state police car. They eventually arrived at their destination just across the Pennsylvania state border, a spot where the three girls had occasionally smoked Mary Jane previously. So this wasn't something where Skylar would be feeling like anything was wrong. She would think, you know, we were just coming out to have a smoke, you know. So once the girls were out of the vehicle, Sheila and Rachel told Skylar that they had forgotten to bring their lighters with them. So Skylar goes and says, okay, well, I'll go back to the car and get my lighter and we can use that. So once Skylar turned her back and started heading towards the car, Sheila and Eddie both said, 1, 2, 3. And this was their agreed upon signal. They would do it on three. And they began to stab Skylar. Although Skylar did attempt to run and was only able to run a few feet, before Rachel tackled her to the ground and continued to assault. Niece managed to wrestle Rachel's knife from her, and in an apparent attempt to defend herself, cut Rachel's ankle. So this girl went down swinging. She tried. Okay. Sheila continued to stab Skylar until there was complete silence, and according to Rachel, Skylar's neck stopped making gurgling sounds, which I think that's just a little horrifying to have that in your head, which now I can see why she went mentally insane for a while, because knowing that image in your head now. I'm not defending her. I'm not saying anything. I'm just understanding why she went cuckoo now because of what she participated in. So Rachel and Sheila attempted to bury Skylar's body, dragging Skylar to the side of the road, but the road ran along a creek, so the soil there was too hard and rocky to dig a hole. They instead cover Skylar's body with rocks, falling branches and dirt, like whatever they could find, they put it on top of her body. They returned to the car to clean themselves and the murder scene, and then left the scene of the crime. So like I said, they walk back to the car, they changed their bloody clothes and just left her. Which I'm like, I don't know. My moral compass is different than most people. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I cannot leave my friend like that. First of all, I would never do that to my friend. That's just evil as all hell. So here's the thing. When the police asked Rachel why they did this, what made them do this, her simple response was, we just didn't like her anymore. Question, if you don't like somebody, do you kill them or do you just ignore them and leave them all hell alone?
I disassociate.
Exactly. You know? I don't get it. I don't get why if you don't like somebody, you gotta kill them.
Yeah.
What, does she have proof that can devastate your life? No. Listen, I highly doubt Skylar was going to do anything to devastate anybody. She didn't seem to be that type of girl. So, Skylar's body was officially found on January 16th, 2013. Though Sheila knew the body had been located, she still attempted to keep up her appearance on social media. On the day in question, Sheila uploaded a picture of the three friends with the caption, Rest easy, Skylar. You'll always be my best friend. In addition to this, just a month before her eventual arrest in April, Sheila tweeted in an ominous tweet saying, "We really did go on three. This was possibly a sadistic nod towards the couple killing Skylar on the count of three." Which I'm just like, what the French? Motives of the crime remain unknown today. So we just know that they say, oh, we did it because we didn't like her anymore. But was that really the reason why? Was there more to it? You know, they're not saying, which is unfortunate. So, although there are a lot of people, like I said, who speculate that Rachel and Sheila were sexually active with each other and therefore killed Skylar in an attempt to hide this, entries in her diary and tweets sent out by the teen just days before her death suggested she knew secrets that she was willing to expose to about her friends, and as a result, it was thought to be the reason for her death. So, on May 1st, 2013, Rachel pleads guilty to second-degree murder according to the court transcript. And Rachel said that she and Sheila picked up niece in Sheila's car. The girls drove to Pennsylvania, got out of the car, and began socializing at a pre-arranged time. Rachel and Sheila stabbed Skylar to death. The teens attempted to bury Skylar's body, but were unable to do so, and instead covered the body with branches. The court transcript indicates that other students overheard conversations between Rachel and Sheila about the murder plot, but failed to report it, thinking they were joking. According to Rachel's plea agreement, she pled guilty to murder in the second degree by unlawfully, feloniously, willfully, maliciously, and intentionally, there's a lot of Lees there, just saying, causing the death of Skylar's niece by stabbing her and causing fatal injuries. In the plea agreement, the state of West Virginia recommended a sentence of 20 years incarceration. So Rachel's family issued a public apology for her actions through their lawyer. That face. I wish you guys could see this. Next season, we will go live and you guys could see his faces. So on September 4th, 2013, West Virginia prosecutors publicly identify Sheila as a second alleged perpetrator of the murder of Skylar and announced that she was being tried as an adult. Sheila was indicted by a grand jury on September 6, 2013 on one account of kidnapping, one account of first-degree murder, and one account of conspiracy to commit murder. She pled not guilty. The date of the trial was originally set for January 23, 2014, facing the prospect of additional charges from Pennsylvania authorities. Sheila pleaded guilty to the first-degree murder. She expressed no remorse, but was sentenced to life in prison without... Oh, She was sent to prison with mercy. So under West Virginia law, she is eligible for parole after 15 years. Jesus effing Christ. Why? Pennsylvania authorities did not file charges as per the plea deal. So, following her guilty plea on May 1st, 2013, on February 25th, 2014, Rachel received a sentence of 30 years in prison and will be eligible for parole after 10 years. Okay. And she did show remorse. She was every day in constant tears. This was actually eating at her, which good for you. You should have never did it. You would not be tormented with your actions, smart ass. However, Sheila originally was held in a facility for juveniles after her arrest. Now, both women are incarcerated at the Lacan Correctional Center in Mason County. And then there was an adjustment to the Amber Alert. So, just to let you guys know about this too. An Amber Alert was not issued in Skylar's disappearance because the circumstance did not meet all four criteria for an alert to be issued. One is a child is believed to be adopted. Two, a child is under the age of 18. Three, the child may be in danger of death or serious injury. Four, there is insignificant information to indicate the Amber Alert would be helpful. A waiting period of 48 hours had to elapse before a teenager could be considered missing. A West Virginia state legislator from the niece's family home district introduced a bill called Skylar's Law to modify West Virginia's Amber Alert plan to issue immediate public announcement when any child is reported missing or in danger, regardless whether the child is believed to have been kidnapped. Opinion columns appeared in both West Virginia and national media in support of Skylar's Law, some of which also acknowledge criticism and drawbacks of the legislation. On March 27, 2013, the West Virginia House of Delegates approved Skylar's Law with a 98-0 vote. So everybody said yay. On April 12, 2013, the West Virginia Senate unanimously passed the law but made minor technical changes to the bill, which the House of Delegates voted to accept on the same day. The West Virginia Governor, Earl Ray Tomlin, signed the legislation into law in May 2013. So now it's your turn. What's your opinion? Let us know. You've been holding your tongue. Let's go.
First off, I would not consider any of them her best friend. Because this case pissed me off. Anyway,
why is it that all the cases I do get you pissed off?
Well, because they were supposed to be friends. They were the two musketeers. They were inseparable, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. I totally believe that Rachel and Sheila had a thing. And Skylar had secrets that she was about to expose. And that's why she was killed. I 100% believe that. And that's why Skylar was pushed off or away, because nobody really wants to tell their parents or have it publicly known that they're, especially at that teenagers that they're gay or whatever. This is another, the reason it pisses me off is because the police screwed up again, as they usually do in cases like this. I don't understand why it takes someone to die for them to adjust their Amber Alert. A child is missing under the age of 18. That's automatic for you to, hey, let's spread the news. Maybe somebody will find them in the streets, whatever. I'm confused about the North Carolina thing, if they were nowhere near North Carolina. I don't get that part.
Well, because remember, at that point, they were on the assumption that she ran away.
No, I understand that, but...
And they were in the hopes that she was still alive.
No, I understand that, but my question is, what did somebody from North Carolina know anything about it?
Because they say that the girl looked like Skylar.
So was this driving? So was this North Carolina person driving in that area? Or was it because she
was in North Carolina, the sighting. And they said it appeared that, because remember, the last video of Skylar was her going into a vehicle. So their assumption is, okay, maybe they drove to North Carolina thinking, okay, well, I'm not in West Virginia anymore. I can get away with it, you know?
Yeah, but I'll say it like this. West Virginia and the border of Pennsylvania is nowhere near North Carolina, so I don't get that part. I'm confused by that part. Anyway. what pissed me the most off is that they had planned this for months.
Yeah.
How do you like, what teenage brain do you have that you can plot a death of another person because she knows something and just, okay, we got to get rid of her. Secondly, or most importantly for me, Sheila coming to her parents' house aggravated me the most.
Yes.
Because that's, to me, a sign of a guilty person.
Sheila was very much doing the thing to wanting to stay up to date when it came to the case. She wanted to know what was going on, what was being said. So her being the best friend, comforting the family, you know, gave her the access to hear any details of what was going on.
Okay, you could say like that all you want to. All she wanted to make sure was that her name wasn't being mentioned.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying.
No, I understand, but you said it nicely. I don't. and then her breaking down in the room and the mother sharing a hug, I would have slapped the crap out of her.
It was a stage. Because even...
Of course it is.
There's actually video on YouTube where you can see that while she's in court, she's worried about her hair. She keeps touching her hair. She's smiling. And the only time she shows like a tear or sign of sadness is when they talk about her going to jail. And I'm like, what? And then you see Rachel, her hair looks crazy. Like she's not really focused about that hair. She's constantly, you know, with her head down, crying, wiping away the tears, having a tissue with her. And you see, you know, and then you hear her testimony where she's sorry and she apologizes to the family. She apologizes to basically everybody for her action. But what I liked the most was that in that video, the dad says she can take her apology
and shove it
and sit on it.
Yeah.
Because that apology is not going to bring back his daughter.
Of course not. I am also aggravated at the part that she's a church-going girl or she's a church girl. I disbelieve that. Not that it's not true, but anybody that is a churchgoer as supposedly she is, doesn't do shit like this.
Nope.
I also believe that Sheila was the main person. I think Sheila started.
Sheila fighting. Was the mastermind. Sheila was the one that influenced everything. If you look, Sheila's actually the older one between the three girls.
Right.
In if you look at it in terms of months wise, Sheila would be first, then it's Skylar, and then it's Rachel. So I can see it as Sheila being where she's like, no, we need to do this. We need to get her away because I cannot have this girl ruining my reputation.
Right, and she was very worried about her reputation, as you said, fixing she was, her hair. And
yep.
The thing about the tweet about rest easy and...
It was for show.
Yeah, I mean, like, the audacity of this girl, first off. Secondly, she already gave a hint that about we really did go on three. Like,
and then here's a fun fact for you. So they arrested her at, I think it was like, what, Crackle Jack or Cracker Barrel, whatever it's
Cracker
called.
Cracker Barrel.
And she tried to put up a fight when she was getting arrested. But here's the other side note is that her mom also got like a fine. I think it was like a fine or something towards her because of the fact that she was trying to. It's that word. Damn it. I forgot it. It's when you're kind of basically washing away evidence.
Okay.
And she was very much helping to. You know, as a mother, I can understand you want to protect your child. But I feel, I'm sorry, if my child does that kind of shit, I tell my kids, it's your action, you deal with the consequences. Every action has a consequence.
So her mother was destroying everything.
Yeah. So I guess there was like, probably like maybe some bloody clothes and she washed it and it's just like.
Yeah, destroying everything.
You know, and then she would delay things to try to help, you know, cover up for her child.
And correct me if I'm wrong, is this the...
Sheila's mom.
The bitch that apologized through her lawyer?
No. Okay. That's Rachel's parents.
I agree with the parents. I would not take a dad apology either. One, if you're going to apologize, you apologize.
Yep.
You want to be in front of the cameras and apologize, yes, and, you know, I'm so sorry. Not through your lawyers, like, you got a mouthpiece. And you're not really saying shit.
No.
The lawyer could have said it and saying, yeah, the parents want to meet us. Who? What do I know? That's what exactly. They really want. You could have said it to make it easier on her.
Hoping that if there's remorse from the parents of the murder victim, then that can... create a more leniency. But my thing is, Rachel already took a plea deal.
Well, not
Rachel,
the murder victim.
What?
The perpetrator, not the murder victim.
No, what I'm saying is, if when her dad would go up there, he can be like, oh, you know, Your Honor, Rachel has shown remorse, you know, let's give her at least some kind of leniency.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like that's what they did the whole apology for, was to have a little bit of leniency. That way, it's less on Rachel. But at the end of the day, Rachel agreed to a plea deal. Okay?
That's
which, I'm like, yo, seriously? We're going to give a plea deal to this girl? But I can understand where cops and lawyers are like, okay, we need one of these people to crack. And she's cracking already. Let's try to get this, you know, from her. Let's offer her something. That way, we can get this one who's being a conniving, backstabbing, legit backstabbing, two-face.
Yeah. I don't understand the, and I think this was Rachel, that got 20 years to life with mercy.
Sheila got 31 years.
I know, but Rachel got, was it 20 with mercy?
No, she got, that was Sheila. Sheila got
That's even worse.
31 years with... Let me go back. We'll go back.
Well, if that's true, that's even worse, because if she was the mastermind, if she was the one that actually started stabbing Weather, I'm not sure.
So Sheila got life in prison with mercy, which means that she's eligible for parole after 15 years.
That's bullshit.
And Rachel received a 30-year sentence with a 10-year parole.
And that's bullshit, too. And okay. Rachel got the plea deal.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, tell us what happened. Tell us everything that happened, and we'll make it easy on you. First person to give me that information gets the deal. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel was already breaking down when she went in, she was the first one to talk.
Yeah.
We stabbed her. So I understand her getting the deal. What I don't understand is Sheila, if they gave her life imprisonment, why the hell with mercy? I don't get that. And then 15 years is eligible for parole. Okay, we all understand that nobody that has killed somebody or in concert with someone that killed somebody I don't get the mercy part at all. They gave her life, so excuse me. I think that everyone knew that Sheila was the mastermind. She was the one that probably started stabbing first. It's just confusing to me. But one of them,
mm-hmm.
I think it's Rachel, is due for parole next year. It was 2014 when she got arrested. So 10 years.
But isn't it where it's like according to when you were sentenced, like your sentencing date, that's when it begins, or
right,
what?
That's what you said.
Rachel has 10-year parole and a 30-year. 30-year.
Right, 30 years. So, she's depending. If I believe the fact that jail time is only 9 months instead of 12, she should be with the possibility of being paroled this year, sometime in May or the following.
But that's if it's approved.
No, I understand. But what I'm trying to say is that she first comes to the probation,
yeah,
you know, parole meeting soon.
Yeah.
Sheila
has five more years. 5 more years.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, honestly, if you ask me, you know how I feel about this already. I've said it multiple times. With Sheila specifically, I'm going to give Rachel the benefit of the doubt, and not because she was a churchgoer. They should have thrown away the key on Sheila.
Well, they kind of did.
Not really.
But they gave a leniency to it, which I'm like, why?
That's why they did it. That's why I feel they did it. Like, give her life in, you know, life in prison. She, you know, mastermind, whatever. And, you know, okay, do I believe that she'll be coming out in 15 years? No. Not at all.
I highly doubt that the niece family is going to let this happen.
Well, I mean, if I was her parents, I'll make sure that mm-hmm. I'm there in every probation hearing.
Yep.
On either one of those girls.
I think they'd notify you.
Oh, yeah. You get notified.
That such and such is coming up for parole.
Yep. We would like to hear, you know, if you are willing to make a... Oh, yeah.
Hear your point of view.
I'm coming.
Mm-hmm. So they do have, at the site of where Skylar died, and where her body was located, they do have, like, a little memorial. Mm-hmm. There's a bench to sit. They have a little garden there as well. And from what I've seen in pictures, it's pretty cute. And I think it's Skylar approved.
Gotcha.
So.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, these cases upset me because it's like, there's no reason for it. Like, listen, if she, like, now I say this, if Skylar outed them, straight outed them on Twitter and wherever else, and because of that, she was murdered. Still not understandable, but I can understand it a little bit more. Like, listen, she ruined my reputation. You know, she said these lies.
Yeah, and then it could be considered like a rage killing.
Right.
You know?
Which means, like, I lost my brain. You know, she outed me and I just went crazy.
Yeah.
But this one was a meditated
murder. Premeditated.
Yeah, premeditated murder. Yeah. And the BS about that tan yellowish car, and it wasn't Skylar's. Like, really?
It wasn't Sheila's.
Sheila, excuse me. It wasn't Sheila's. Really?
Yeah.
As soon as I heard that, I'm like, I bet you that's Sheila's car.
Yep.
And then why was Rachel gone?
So she had church camp.
Was she really in church camp?
Yeah.
Okay.
She was. She goes to it every year. So that, well, now she can't, but yeah. At that time, she used to go every year to church camp. And I'm saying a lot of, sorry about that. But, yeah, so I think they kind of, I think that's why they did it close to that time, where that the next day she's gone. She'll go to camp. That covers up her story. She could say, well, no, I just, we just went out on a joyride, and that's the last time I saw her, you know. And it gives her time to, you know, not think about it. But think about it. You just killed somebody, and then the next day you're going to church camp. And now you can't tell anybody at your church camp what you just did. And you got to simmer in it. And then when you get home, the cops interview you. So right there, your conscience, you did the action. Now you're in church camp where your conscience is eating at you because you're on Bible mode 24/7. Then you come home to get interviewed by the police. And I think that's what broke her down.
I wonder if she had to confess, you know, like, was there any confession in any of that as far as...
Like a confession booth?
Yeah, like, you know, in the camp? Church, you know. At the beginning or at the end, you usually go into confession. You know, especially towards the end, because you learned everything you needed to learn. You confess your sins. I wonder if that ever happened.
I don't know. And that the fortunate part is, don't they have that, like, that thing where it's like, what is said in a confession booth? In a
confession booth?
Yes. Is, like, kept between you and the Father?
Yeah, a priest cannot say anything about that.
Okay. So it's kind of like when supposedly you go to your doctors or your therapist, that's disclosed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, full disclosure. Damn, because I would have been like, what? She confessed? Oh! You know?
Also, we also got to also understand that it depends on what kind of church this was. Because not all churches have confession booths, you know, or that do confessions at all.
I think she was Catholic.
That's what I was thinking. So, like, then definitely there was some type of confession area that she had to go mm-hmm. at the beginning or at the end, especially if it was a Catholic church.
Hmm.
So, yeah, well, but I mean, yeah, terrible, terrible loss.
It was.
For no damn reason.
True. And this girl had aspired to be a criminal defense lawyer. And remember earlier, I did say, you know, in her own way, she did become a defense lawyer. Mm-hmm. And it's because she helped with the whole Skylar law. So I feel this law is for, protects against kids who are in situations that can be vital. And, you know, it's a criminal act to kidnap somebody. It's a criminal act to kill somebody or do any kind of harm to somebody. So I feel that's why I say, even though she is gone, she still became that criminal lawyer. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean,
in a weird type of way.
No. I totally understand that, and that's totally true. I think the thing that hurt her case the most, though, was her running to the car. So if I was a cop or a person just hearing this, she ran away with her boyfriend.
And that's what Sheila said.
Yeah.
She might have had a secret boyfriend, right. Which she didn't.
No, I know.
Yeah.
But the thing is perception.
Yes.
You know, you're not going to run into a car the way it sounded, joyfully running, like, hey, let's go, let's get out of here. Have some fun in whatever way you want to say, make that to be. Yeah. I mean, I thought Sheila coming to the house was suspicious of hell. But anyway.
Oh, hell yeah. So if you guys have your opinions that you guys want to express to us, or you have a case you guys want us to talk about, you can always email us at
murderousintentions21@gmail.com.
Or you can visit our Instagram page at
murderous_intentions_podcast. Or you can always tweet us at
MI True Cry Podcast. Thank you guys, and enjoy your weekend. Stay safe and behave.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.